Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Devin.
And Devin, since we last spoke, I don't know how it was possible, but things have gotten even shittier for women.
I don't even know what to do. And actually, can I just say that right before we started recording, I was on Twitter because I'm obsessed now.
Yeah.
and someone posted this clip of Jason Momoa, who plays Aquaman in the new DC movie, saying that he loved sci-fi because of all like the cool stuff you could do, like, you know, ripping a tongue out of a guy's mouth, like that's cool, right?
Uh-huh.
And then one of the things he said was raping beautiful women.
What? Are you fucking serious?
And it made me so angry. Like,
wait, he legit said that?
He legit said that.
What?
Yeah.
Like in the wake of Harvey Weinstein, especially?
Yeah.
Oh my fucking God.
I mean, honestly, this might have been, I don't know when the clip was from. It might have been from Comic-Con, it might have been from something else. But either way, I mean, it made me like actually tear up because,
yeah.
I mean, like nerd culture and like these like comic books and these superhero movies are so important to me and you know, so important to so many people. And to have like a major star like that at this like really anticipated movie of someone who's going to be in the same movie as Wonder Woman,
right,
saying that like just breaks my heart.
Yeah, I've been like, you know, I don't consume alcohol anymore, so I've just been getting drunk off my own rage this week. Like I am in full rage blackout mode. I was like yelling at Anthony Bourdain on Twitter yesterday. Today, the news I woke up today that was like getting me. Like, it wasn't even getting me fired up. Like, I'm at the point of my rage where it's turned into hysteria.
Right.
And I'm, like, laughing maniacally. Like, everything is so ridiculous that I can't help but laugh sometimes. Because it's just,
I know.
Like, what else do you do? And I woke up to the news this morning that Bernard Sanders, of all people, is going to headline the Women's March convention. I was just like, okay, a white man who attacked Planned Parenthood and who has supported anti-choice candidates is going to headline this Women's March convention. Like, that's just so 2017. Like,
I know.
Joy Reid literally responded to my tweet and was like, nothing matters. And I was like, I know.
I know. We're in nothing burger range.
We're like, in nothingmatters.com.
I don't know what to do here. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway.
It's been a rough morning.
There was some news outlet that tweeted like, oh, it's been a rough week for men, and then Heather Matarazzo was like, it's been a rough eternity for women. Plus we already said in our last episode that white men are canceled. Apparently they didn't get that memo, so we got to keep pushing harder.
I know. Should we just need to like put out like an email blast like, hey all, like, can't wait to like do this mixer. By the way, let's all remember white men are canceled. Okay, thank you.
Yep, white men are canceled.
You're done. Know what that voice was.
Yeah, I don't know what that was either. I was like, you know what?
It's been a weird week. Okay.
Yeah. We're out of our wits. So Devin, why don't you, speaking of us being out of our wits and trying to do a cohesive podcast, Devin, why don't you take us through what we're going to talk about today?
Yeah. So first up, we're going to do listener feedback and general updates as always.
Mm-hmm.
Then block two, it is time to talk about big data again.
Yes.
Which I had so much fun writing this section.
I know you did. I could tell.
Like, I know.
Nick was reading it to me and we were both laughing really hard.
Yeah, I was like having such a good time. And I like when I pitched this to you yesterday, you were like, go ham.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
Like, yes.
I was like, please go for it. Let's go. I know. It's not like, you know, the Sarah who shoots down your climate change and tax reform requests.
You're like, no.
Yeah, I know. Now I'm like, oh, I got to rethink that because fully the apocalypse is coming for sure.
Right. So like, fuck it. Nothingmatters.com.
Yeah.
Then block three, we're so excited. We have an interview with Andy Zeisler, who is the co-founder and creative editorial director for Bitch Media.
Yes,
so she's amazing.
I love her. I can't wait for you to talk to her, and I can't wait to listen to it.
I'm so excited. Okay, then we go have our gratitude check, which is sorely needed in these dark, dark political times.
Yes.
And then block five, we've got Hellion of the Week, and we have a really great Hellion. I'm really excited to talk about her.
Yes.
And then last but not least, we've got some action items, so something you can do after you listen to the show.
A Okay, Devin, so let's get into our listener feedback and general updates section really quickly. So what's the first bit of feedback that we've gotten or correction?
Well, the first one's from you. You literally put this in our Slack channel.
I actually, because I Googled it because I wasn't sure. And then yeah. I got information from the Googles because that's from how the internet Googles. Works.
It's a series of tubes. So Sarah corrected me, quote, 43 states directly elect attorneys general. Others are appointed by either the governor, state legislature, or state Supreme Court, which I actually didn't know. I thought they were all elected.
I know, so. Me too. That's why I Googled it, because I was like, wait, I mean, because, you know, states can get real weird.
Yeah, it's you true. You know, it's
like
true.
States can go bananas and just like do things differently. So you never right. know.
So I guess, yeah, there are seven states who do not elect the attorney general. But even still, I think it's worth calling their office
and, for sure.
you know, letting them know what you think.
Yeah.
Because they still work for you.
They were. Yeah. They're public servants. And this was in regards to one of our action items around birth control, because there's a couple of attorneys general, including our own in California, who are pursuing action against the Trump administration for rolling back that birth control rule that we talked about. So, yep, definitely get in touch with your attorneys general. Then Gary tweeted at us and said, quote, this may sound weird, but I'm really excited to hear the Sunbasket ad. Congrats to Hellbent on getting ad money. International Pod Day convo in action.
Yeah, I was super nervous about doing ads. Yes. Sarah could attest to this.
lots of different feelings around doing ads. Like,
it's definitely a big step for us, and this is the first step to like making this a full-time job and being able to dedicate all of our resources to the show. So you know, I'm so grateful to all the listeners that gave us positive feedback on them, because it just makes my cold feminist heart like just melt into a puddle.
Yeah, there was definitely some worry on our end about how listeners would react. And, you know, like, yeah, we want this to be a gig that is, like Devin said, full time. And this is part of hopefully getting there. So it's really exciting. And it's just really cute. Everyone was really supportive in our Twitter feed. So thank you to Hellions for supporting us in every single way.
I know. It's so good. And then finally, Chris tweeted, quote, another great episode this week. As a cis white guy, I really appreciate what y'all have to say. Thanks for all that you do. And I love this feedback because, first of all, it's not lost on me that he said y'all.
Yeah.
And not you guys.
Yeah.
And it just reminds me that the rage that I feel is not just limited to women, and that we are actually getting through to people, and people are examining their own privilege.
Yeah. No, I got a text from my friend Jesse yesterday, basically saying a similar thing. Like, this, you know, cis white guy appreciates what y'all do too. And it is really heartwarming. And, it's especially since our last episode was literally titled White Men Are Canceled. Like, that's when you know, like, dudes are solid when they can, like, see that episode title and not get offended. Like, that's when you know you've got, like, a solid dude. Like, don't get offended when you're like, men are trash. Like, white men are canceled.
Yeah. And even beyond that, be like, you're right. White men are canceled.
Yep. I'm with you.
And then we just want to do a quick update on Patreon, because I've been holding down the fort somewhat disorganizedly.
No, not disorganizedly. It's just that you have to do fucking everything.
Yeah.
And I used to run our Patreon page and like reach out to people who are new patrons, and, you know, our it's starting at $1. We follow people on Twitter. So I haven't been reaching out, obviously, the last couple of months, because I haven't been able to use my computer. So if you're a new patron and we haven't followed you on Twitter, please message us on Patreon so we can get that sorted.
Yes, we will get everything figured out and make sure we follow everyone and do all of those checks. So also, we are really excited about the ads. If you could go to iTunes and subscribe and rate us, that would be great. If I sound thirsty, it's because I am.
You know what? I'm all for shameless self-plugs. I mean, this is our podcast, god damn it.
God damn it. I have a high horse. I have a podcast.
No, but really, subscribing and rating us 5 stars helps us surface even more broadly. So it's super helpful. And it's a really quick, easy thing you can do if you're so inclined. So thank you.
Okay, Sarah, we are going to talk about big data. But first, we want to do a quick disaster update.
Yes.
Because I mean, sometimes it really feels like it's the end of times. And I know that's a joke and this is not funny, but sometimes it's just so overwhelming. So can you kind of tell us what's going on with that?
Yeah, so there are fires in our home state of California. Yeah. So there's a big one in Northern California, and there have been reported, at least at the time of this recording, 23 deaths and 600 missing, which is huge. And about 160,000 acres have been burning. And an important note too, evacuation centers will not ask about immigration status, which I think is really, really crucial. And then there's also a fire in Southern California in Anaheim. So there's one injured and 7,500 acres burned. So we're really keeping everyone affected by that in our thoughts. And like we said, it's happening in our home state. And from what I understand, I don't think Trump has said anything about it.
Yeah, I'm not, I haven't been keeping super close tabs on it. But yeah, he does not seem that concerned about it.
No. And speaking of, you know, I think, again, Puerto Rico.
Oh, yeah.
It's beyond maddening what's happening in Puerto Rico, because people are in distress and dying because of our own government's negligence and incompetence. Like, that's just what it is.
Right. We're now past the period where it's the hurricane that's, you know, hurting and killing people.
Right.
And we're now at the point where it's the lack of response.
Yeah.
I was listening to Maddo last night, and she was talking about how people are dying of treatable bacterial diseases.
Right.
Because they are drinking contaminated water because they don't have any other water source.
Mm-hmm.
So Puerto Rico's death toll hit 45 as of this recording. But again, they're not sure. Most people still don't have power. There's a lot of chaos. It's really not clear what the actual death toll is. So.
Yeah. So we definitely wanted to keep all those people who are still affected, who are affected by natural disasters and by, you know, our own government not doing its job, frankly.
Yeah.
We want to keep y'all in our thoughts, and we're we're going to keep close tabs on those stories because they're important.
Yeah. So, okay, kids, it is time to talk about big data again.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite topics to talk about on this podcast. Okay, so let me just like give a little context here. We know that Facebook and Twitter sold ads to Russia-linked propaganda accounts. And now we can add Google and YouTube to that list.
Mm-hmm.
And then also there was another story about how a lot of this content has made its way to Pinterest.
Yeah, I was like, it got to Pinterest, y'all.
Yeah, I know. Like, my dream closet organization board is forever tainted. Like,
and we on this podcast at one point were talking about how we wanted to create our own Pinterest page with boards of our like Russia investigation stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is, I mean, everything's coming full circle.
Apparently now Pinterest is political. So cool.
Yeah. And I guess what had happened is that content that was populating across the internet was being pinned on Pinterest. Like, I don't think that they were going to Pinterest specifically, but it was just coming up into Pinterest.
Right. So, well, here's the rub of that, though.
Mm-hmm.
There was a great quote from the Washington Post, quote, "The acknowledgement by Pinterest also highlights an essential truth of the internet that helped bolster the Russian agenda. Once content appears on a site or social network, it can be shared across the web by ordinary Americans in unpredictable ways and reach a far broader audience than its initial readership."
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that's the sort of importance of the Pinterest story.
Right.
It's not just the initial ad buys. It's not just the initial sort of readership that you're targeting, but the internet is A, forever.
Yes.
And B, vast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're really going to infiltrate all these corners of the internet. So that's just really something to keep in mind. So when you see something on Pinterest, like, it came from a source. We don't know the source of that source.
Right. And I remember even like Hillary Clinton talking about how ads in general that get promoted on Facebook, even if they're from like American super PACs, for example.
Right.
Like, the Facebook page might be something like Americans for Freedom, but maybe that super PAC, maybe there's a super PAC or a PAC behind pumping money into that. So you don't even know like where that content is originating anyway, even if it's coming from American sources.
Right, right. Well, and so what's really kind of disturbing about this is now that we know that Google also had Russian ad buys, Google is the largest advertiser on the internet. they have the largest ad network.
Right.
You know, because Facebook is limited to Facebook.com. Twitter is limited to Twitter.com. Google is literally our technological overlords. Again, I say this and it's kind of funny, but it's also true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they have advertising on YouTube associated with Google search, Gmail, and then, you know, the DoubleClick ad network, which is just the largest.
Which is their own ad network, right? Google's.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then let's take a quick hot second to unpack this, because first of all, Google has admitted to dick.
Yeah. Yeah. They. I don't think they've gone on the record. Like this story from the Washington Post.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that reporter was on Maddow recently and she was saying that it was just like, basically anonymous sources.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like Google is not on record. Mm-hmm. And then also let's add to that like the responses from Twitter and Facebook, they've worked so hard to downplay their sort of roles in this. You know, they've trying to say like, oh yeah, it was a little bit of money, but not that much. Like mm-hmm. It couldn't have affected anything. Like they're really pushing that narrative.
Part of me also wonders too, like, I don't know if it's like willful or they're just honestly in over their heads and they are still trying to figure out what the fuck happened during our election. Because I know in France, for example, like tens of thousands of bots were like kicked off social media platforms.
Right.
Because I think they had, smartened up by the time France's elections rolled around. But yeah, it's interesting because Sheryl Sandberg was actually speaking publicly today and she was saying that she was like, what happened? She basically said what happened shouldn't have happened, which is a pretty mild thing to say. But like, yeah, I think that they're still grasping at the straws.
You know, to couch it a little bit, I don't think that Facebook was or any of these networks were prepared.
Right.
Like you said, by the time France's elections rolled around, they had smartened up a little bit and they maybe had like a template to use.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that anyone was really expecting this. And I think also the reason why they're being so sort of like skittish about this is that these are huge, powerful, rich companies.
Right.
And they employ thousands of people and have products that are used by billions of people every day. And they rely heavily on algorithms, automated systems, and good faith actors. So they don't want to admit their shortcomings and they don't want to have to change these highly profitable systems.
Yeah, I think that there's something to that. And I think, you know, like that reporter who broke this story about Google was saying, is that I think that there is an trepidation in admitting that these platforms that they built were easily manipulated.
Right.
Very easily manipulated. And I think, too, along this vein, Dev, and I think it's worth taking a minute to talk about Silicon Valley culture in general. And you know, we've talked about this in the past before and, you know, with some of our guests. But, you know, tech companies tend to have toxic cultures. They tend to be dominated by privileged white men.
Right.
And there's this unwillingness or this defensiveness in sort of admitting to their own shortcomings. And I think that, you know, the product solutions that they put forward are not up to snuff with the social and democratic problems that we have as a country. Like they haven't, you know, just being a woman on Twitter, they certainly haven't done a good enough job addressing harassment or abuse. Just, you know, as one example, and then obviously with our election, I mean, they got completely, I mean, we all in a way got completely bamboozled.
Well, yeah. And I think, like you said, you know, part of it is that they don't care to like deal with like harassment of women on Twitter, but also they were caught a little flat footed here.
Yes.
You know, there was an obvious, you know, chink in the armor, as it were, and it was exploited.
Yep.
And, you know, the findings that these companies have, like, kind of handed over and talked about to Russia-backed propaganda are just laughable. And this is something that really bothers me. So Twitter is admitting to finding 200 accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook found 470 accounts and about 3,000 ads.
And when you say accounts, these are, like, from Russian troll armies?
Right. Okay. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So these kind of, like, Russian-backed accounts. So 200 on Twitter, 470 on Facebook. Facebook is saying like there was about 3,000 ads. Google's saying there was about $60,000 in ads. But first of all, that's bullshit. There's no way it's that small of a number.
Mm-hmm.
Because these platforms serve hundreds of millions, if not more, accounts. And the implication that there were only a few hundred accounts on each of these platforms linked to the Russian election interference is horseshit.
Yeah, I think it's horseshit too. And again, I can't tell if it's because they're completely in over their heads and they haven't figured everything out, or if they're being shy about disclosure.
I think it's always both.
It's always both. We haven't said that in a while.
I know.
No, but Sheryl Sandberg, again, to bring her up, so she's the COO of Facebook. She was saying, I believe she met with congressional investigators, and I believe that Facebook is going to turn over their ads or make them public. And once they do, they're also going to reveal the targeting, which should be super interesting, from these Russia-linked accounts.
I will be very fascinated by that. That is a report I will read cover to cover. What's also interesting about all of this, and when I say interesting, I mean mind-meltingly horrible. you know, it is illegal for foreign nationals to contribute money or run ads for a candidate.
Yeah.
But the law has not really caught up with this modern technology and these huge automated systems. There was another great quote from this article. Quote, "But the 2016 presidential election proved that foreign malefactors can circumvent U.S. law, no matter what it says. Automated ad purchasing systems, plus limited rules around political ad disclosure, can make it easy for foreign political dollars to slip through the cracks on social media sites."
Mm-hmm.
So that goes back to the sort of it's always both. Like, these tech companies were sort of caught flat-footed. They weren't really expecting it. And then they also have these big automated platforms to exploit, and they don't want to admit that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so now we kind of know how the Russian government put the false information out into the ether, right?
Right.
We've got these platforms. But how did they know where to put it?
Yeah, and this is a question we keep coming back to.
This is sort of the $10 million question.
Because like you said, it's illegal for you know, for non-Americans to pump money into American candidates. But so that's one piece of it. But the other piece in terms of Trump and this investigation into collusion is, did the Trump campaign help Russian efforts to influence the election? That's the $1 million question.
Right. Well, so now the Russia probe is sniffing around Cambridge Analytica.
Yes.
Which is the big data firm that helped the Trump campaign. It's also very interesting because it has sort of a sinister pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Bannon, as of April 2017, had holdings in the company worth as much as $5 million.
Oh, wow. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. Cambridge Analytica is also partly owned by Robert Mercer, who is a Trump GOP mega donor.
Yes.
And he's also a major benefactor of Breitbart.
Yeah. All this shit is so fucking related.
Yeah. So we've got Bannon, Mercer, the Trump campaign, all in this shit pie.
Yep.
Just hanging out together.
And then Kushner, of course, because he brought in Cambridge Analytica to the Trump campaign.
Right. And then bragged about it in a December 2016 article in Forbes.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on there.
These fucking Nimrods, man.
Seriously. And so Cambridge Analytica's claim to fame are their, quote, psychographic insights.
Yeah.
So they really push this idea or this product they have that they say goes beyond typical voter targeting. So they rely on online clues from Facebook likes and other social media indicators to sort of give a larger, broader hint at where people are on the political spectrum. And, you know, so they say that they use this psychographic picture to create tailor specific messages based on personality type even.
Yeah.
So if you're angry or optimistic or, you know, fearful or pessimistic, rather than just, you know, doing an ad blast. You know, because with these automated systems, you can target so specifically.
Right, right. And that's the thing is, a lot of people who are looking at these, Russian efforts to influence the election, and specifically on social media platforms, have said that the you have to have had a sophisticated understanding of American politics, of our voters, of just the overall landscape. And yes, you could theoretically have gotten that, as one person said, by just obsessively reading 538 and Nate Silver. But what is more likely is that there were help from Americans.
Well, yeah. I mean, and they used it so beautifully, right? Yeah. They used it so masterfully that you just have to wonder. I mean, they created fake, you know, Muslim Facebook pages, you know, like Muslims against Hillary. They created fake, you know, Black Lives Matter type pages that were anti-Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
And they used these strategies that were not only effective, but they were sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, you know, opens that door to this question, like, how did they target female voters in swing districts in Michigan or whatever the demographic might have been?
Yeah, that's why it's going to be really interesting to see the targeting of these Facebook ads if Facebook does release them.
Yeah, because really it was too perfect and it was too effective to have been something from 538.
You know, I think why the Russian, why Russian propaganda was effective is because it played upon tensions that already exist.
Right. Pre-existing fears, pre-existing tensions.
Exactly. And so I think that there were a lot of gullible white people for a reason, if that makes sense.
Right. And what I mean by like too perfect and too effective is more not that it like worked on everybody, but that it was successful in that the ads reached the right people.
Oh, 100%.
Whether or not they affected.
Yeah.
Oh, in general, I think it's a really important discussion to be having.
Yeah. And I feel like it's not being had. Like, I feel like we're not, there were, you know, Russian accounts that targeted, you know, people who might be inclined to vote third party. Like they had ads about Jill Stein and Bernie Sanders and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, again, certain people fell for it and certain people didn't. So anyway, I just think that's an important point. And I feel like it's
not being discussed
enough. And so that's why we have our own podcast and we talk about what we, we goddamn want.
Right, exactly. But yeah, like you said, 94% of Black women voted for Hillary and did not fall for this Russian bullshit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Even a little bit. They're like, yeah, no.
No, I mean, 94% to me is still just such a staggering, amazing number. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we know that Cambridge Analytica is providing documents to the House Intelligence Committee, but they are also under investigation by the UK Information Commissioner for their role in the Brexit campaign.
Oh, yeah.
And I only bring this up because in May, The Guardian reported that Cambridge Analytica's UK affiliate, SCL, which owns 10% of Cambridge Analytica, have worked in Russia, Lithuania, Latvia, Ukraine, Iran, and Moldova.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. So I only bring that up as, you know, it might be a red herring, but it might not be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, the Mercers have their hands, you know.
Oh, right. Have their hands in a lot of cookie jars.
Mm-hmm,
so.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also want to bring up one more point about all of this. So just like I'm convinced that Deutsche Bank is somewhere near the heart of all this Russia stuff, like I know that deep in my soul.
I love that you were like, I'm going to bring this back to Deutsche Bank somehow.
Look, it's always about the money and Deutsche Bank is somehow like screwed into the very heart of this.
Yes.
But I am also sure that Cambridge Analytica is deep in this shit river.
Yep.
Like, and I think everyone knows it.
That's a big question. Did Russia get help from Cambridge Analytica?
Right. That's the question we're asking.
That's the blunt question.
RVA Wonk on Twitter, who is, please follow her. Yeah. She is amazing.
She's awesome.
She points out, quote, remember that in August, Flynn updated his financial disclosure forms and revealed payments from Cambridge Analytica. Bannon said he stepped down from Cambridge Analytica, but they were still paying him after he joined the Trump camp. Cambridge Analytica is funded by the Mercer family, who also funded Breitbart under Bannon's leadership. SCL and Cambridge Analytica harvested data on 30 million unwitting Facebook users right before and during the 2016 campaign. Before working for Trump, Cambridge Analytica worked on Ted Cruz's campaign.
Oh.
Really, they just worked for the Mercers. On a side note, Ted Cruz, who knows Cambridge Analytica's secrets, is the only senator exempt from Bannon's wrath.
Right.
And what she means by that is that Bannon basically said, we are going to primary every incumbent Republican senator except Ted Cruz.
Yeah, he specifically legit said that on the record.
Except Ted Cruz. And you have to wonder why. Like,
Ted Cruz is such a fucking lapdog, too.
Oh, my God. I know.
Like, Donald Trump, like, insulted his wife. He said that his dad is like the fucking Zodiac killer. And then I always think of that fucking video of Ted Cruz.
Yeah, the robocalls.
Making phone calls for
Trump. Oh, it was actual phone calls.
I think he was actually phone banking.
Oh my God.
It was just like, this guy, I mean, if Paul Ryan's soul has died 1,000 deaths, like Ted Cruz's soul is like dispersed across the country into separate horcruxes, you know?
His soul is one of Donald Trump's horcruxes.
Yeah, I mean, like, holy shit, man. Yeah, that's what's super interesting is there's so many different layers and ways that people in Trump's orbit are connected to this big data firm that is possibly connected to these Russian troll armies. Like, that's the big question. That's what we're trying to get at. And I think, the way that social media was employed and exploited throughout the election is important. I think we need to keep talking about it because it's not, like we said, it's not a one and done in 2016. Right. This is going to keep happening.
And this isn't, and I know that like we need to focus on Russia and all this, but this isn't just a Russia and campaign specific problem. Mm-hmm. You know, if these big advertising platforms can be exploited, that has ramifications that go deeper than politics.
Yep.
Like, think about like how much time we spend on social media. And if that experience can be manipulated so easily, that opens the doors to a lot of really scary, like 1984 level shit. Andy Zeisler is a co-founder and creative editorial director of Bitch Media, a nonprofit feminist media organization based in Portland, Oregon. Zeisler's writing, which focuses mainly on feminist interpretations of popular culture, has been featured in a variety of publications, including Mother Jones, the San Francisco Chronicle, the Women's Review of Books, and Miss Magazine. We are so lucky to have her on today. So welcome, Andy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it is so great to have you. I'm not going to lie, I've been a subscriber to Bitch since college, and I'm fangirling pretty hard right now.
Oh, well, thank you for being such a longtime subscriber.
A friend of mine told me about it in my Intro to Women's Studies class that ultimately led me to a degree in women's studies. So,
hey,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad we could be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So first, I actually just want to talk about the word bitch and the sort of reclaiming of that word. Sort of taking this negative language and using it in a positive way. Can you kind of talk about your process with that?
Yeah. So, well, the context for that is that my co-founders and I started this project in 1995, which was culturally such a different time. And the word bitch at that time was still very much like firmly in the realm of, you know, the seven words you weren't allowed to say on TV or radio.
Right.
So it was still very much a, you know, a bad word. I think 1994 was maybe the first time that the FCC started allowing bitch to be, you know, in dialogue on like primetime television.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, yeah, I mean, it was like, this is, you know, it's really pretty recent that it's become kind of a, you know, something that you really hear in common parlance,
right,
and everywhere in popular culture. So at the time we were really thinking of it as like something that was ripe for reclamation, the way the word queer had been reclaimed by, you know, LGBTQ communities. And so for us, there was a little bit of a kind of anticipatory retaliation in it because, you know, we knew that the things we wanted to write about in the zine we started were things that would, you know, get us called bitches, you know, because that's what women are called when they, you know, say things that other people don't want to hear or stand up for themselves. So it was definitely something we talked about and sort of, you know, had a lot of answers prepared for,
right?
Just because we knew it was going to be, you know, the first question that we got. What's interesting to me is that as time went on and bitch did start to be a word that you heard, you know, everywhere, the word feminist in the subtitle, Feminist Response to Pop Culture, started to be more of a kind of sticking point for people.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, by like the earlier mid 2000s, when, you know, we were all used to hearing bitch on the radio all the time or on TV, it was really like, okay, so you have this title, but also you have this subtitle. And my experience certainly was that people found the word feminist more sort of jarring or off-putting than they found bitch.
So is that still the case? So which one kind of gets more of a response, bitch or feminist?
I mean, it kind of depends on the audience. I do think that, you know, the past few years, as feminism has become sort of a trendy buzzword, it's less, you know, it's less questioned. And frankly, because we do a lot more than a magazine at this point, I think the subtitle plays less of a prominent role in, you know, our, I guess, branding, which
right.
is not a word I love, but, you know, it's less sort of prominent in what we do.
Got it.
So yeah, I mean, but yeah, no, certainly, we all still get asked a lot about, the name and, you know, when we're, you know, dealing with like the phone company or, you know, plumbing company, or,
right.
you know, business machines, it's always like, wait, can you say that again?
Yeah.
People are kind of, you know, like, they kind of get off on the, you know, sort of residual naughtiness of it. You know,
right.
like a lot of the like cover letters we get when people apply for internships are like, hey, bitch, I've always wanted to say that, you know what I mean?
Like, right,
it's,
right.
It's still it being somehow transgressive.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love that it's changed over the years and kind of the, you know, the meaning of it has changed. So, you know, next, I do want to jump right into talking about Harvey Weinstein and this sort of, you know, manifestation of rape culture. So can you tell us a little bit about this sort of open secret, you know, framework? And then there was just an article in BuzzFeed about Whisper Networks and this
yeah, the list,
the spreadsheet. Can you kind of talk about that system of oppression and how Harvey Weinstein sort of fits into all of this?
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, I think most people have some sort of network like that in their life, you know, whether it's in the New York media world or whether it's in progressive underground. You know, back when we started Bitch and it was, you know, we were very much in the sort of DIY zine,
right.
music, you know, punk adjacent world. There, you know, people knew, like women talked. We knew who it wasn't, you know, we knew who was safe to be around. We knew who you didn't want to be cornered by
right.
in like a dark club. So those things have obviously always existed as a way for women to kind of keep each other apprised of things.
Yeah.
At my undergrad, and I know this is true of a lot of, you know, women's bathrooms and campuses all over the place, there are lists, you know,
yeah.
there are literally like, stay away from these guys. And that has, you know, they don't always work perfectly.
Right.
But I think they are incredibly helpful in a context like college, like
right.
workplaces where women are, you know, are often questioned about, you know, did this really happen or did you just take it the wrong way?
Right.
Or like, you know, I know this guy, he wouldn't have done that. Like, I've never had bad dealings with him. I think that, you know, with Harvey Weinstein, obviously it was happening on a much larger scale. And it's very hard to hear from, for instance, the board of Miramax saying like, oh, well, we're as shocked as anyone. We had
right.
no idea.
Right.
And it's sort of like, really, like, we're talking about, you know, $1 million payouts to individual women. Like, you didn't have to sign off on any of those. Like,
right.
really?
Like, that's the line you're going to take?
Exactly. Like, please don't insult us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think what is really demoralizing for a lot of women right now is that, you know, you have these incredibly high profile women coming forward, and people still having, you know, a first reaction that casts doubt on them,
right.
you know, and it's sort of like, oh, well, whatever, Ashley Judd, why didn't you come forward sooner? And what's really demoralizing about that is, you know, these are people who had resources. These are people who had support systems. These are people who had powerful, you know, friends or parents or colleagues. If we're still not going to believe them, what chance does, you know, the dental hygienist in Nebraska whose boss has been harassing her for years have? You know what right. I mean? Like, if we can't work this out on a large scale and accept the fact that these are not isolated incidences, this is an entire framework that is perpetuated by, you know, many, many people, right. knowingly or not. It's really hard to think about a way to really get justice for women to whom this happens, you know, every day in every field at any time of day.
So there have been quite a few think pieces, and I'm looking at you, Josh Barrow, about how the problem is really about work culture. And the theory is that, you know, this work culture has gotten too relaxed and informal, and that's led to this kind of behavior, and that we should be working to change the culture, not the men. So can you kind of speak to this? And I, you know, the first thing I thought of when I read this was, you know, Mad Men, you know, in this depiction of this very formal, buttoned up work culture that still had tons of sexual harassment.
I mean, you know, you can go back like hundreds and hundreds of years where everything was very formal and men and women, you know, were separated and, you know, slept on opposite sides of, like, you know, assholes or whatever. And
right.
like, yeah, this shit still managed to happen because of a fundamental power imbalance.
Right.
You know, I'm seeing these hot takes by, you know, Josh Barrow or, you know, Seb fucking Gorka. Can I curse? I don't know.
Oh, yes, but, please.
Okay. We need to change the work culture so that, you know, there aren't these like after work social things where, you know, things can get out of hand and
right.
signals can get mixed. And it's sort of like, no.
Yeah.
You obviously have no idea how this functions. If you're unaware that this happens every day at breakfast, at lunch, in the hallways.
Right.
It has nothing to do with timing.
Right.
And I personally am offended that we should be taking seriously prescriptions from dudes who think that all harassment happens after the sun goes down.
Yeah, I guess for me, it really bothers me that one of the solutions thrown out is like, well, don't meet one-on-one with women. It's like, oh yeah, that's great for my career. Thank you.
Yeah. Many of us have been really lucky to have colleagues and mentors who are men and who are great and who have never perpetuated any of these behaviors. And I do feel for them. This idea that being alone with a woman is somehow going to lead to an allegation against you perpetuates this idea that, you know, women lie for no other reason than to ruin men's lives, which is, you know, wildly insulting. And then also, you know, doesn't ask men to look at behavior that might be alienating anyone, you know, besides women. It might be alienating men. It might be alienating, you know, there's just a way in which the idea that everyone has to adjust their behavior so that, you know, these men can be more comfortable. That is what I object to.
Well, and then there's also this idea that the onus should be put on women. So it's pretty clear with the whole demanding a statement from Hillary Clinton. And this obsession with her statement and the focus on her. And then she was berated for not knowing earlier that this was going on and doing something to stop it. So what do you think that sort of intense focus is about?
Like just besides straight up Hillary Clinton specific misogyny? I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
Yeah.
Because surely she is not the only high level female politician who has, you know, taken money from Harvey Weinstein or, you know, any sort of ethically compromised person.
I mean, we have a president who admitted to sexually assaulting women. So, I mean, this is...
Exactly.
It's like...
Exactly. Like, this is an amazing, amazing display of cognitive dissonance, which is
right.
saying a lot because that's literally everything right now
right.
about everything.
Right.
Is just cognitive dissonance. I find it really insulting.
Yeah.
Like, we see you, we see what you're trying to do. You know, obviously we can walk and chew gum at the same time, but as long as you're going to be on Hillary Clinton's Private Citizen,
yes,
can we also talk about, you know, Donald Trump, president of the actual fucking United States?
Right, right. To sort of switch tracks a little bit, I want to take a minute and talk about Jemele Hill. She was recently suspended from her ESPN job for a, quote, second violation of their social media policy. So do you think, again, sort of a leading question, do you think that it was fair that she was suspended? And why do you think she was suspended?
I absolutely do not think it's fair that she was suspended. I think she was suspended because of optics.
Right.
There are plenty of people who work in media companies, including other people at ESPN, who have spoken out against Donald Trump. But, you know, the fact that she's a woman, the fact that she's Black, the fact that she was specifically talking about the hypocrisy of Donald Trump vis-a-vis, you know, the police brutality protests and just, you know, how very, very much he was ignoring the real substance of those protests. You know, I think that really compromised the bottom line for ESPN.
No, that makes perfect sense. And she was a pretty easy scapegoat to go after, I imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So now that we've had that really depressing conversation, at the end of all of our episodes, we like to do a gratitude check to take stock of the good things that are happening in this hellfire dumpster landscape.
That's such a good idea.
Of political bullshit.
I don't think about that enough. Yeah, I don't think about gratitude enough.
Yeah. It's really the only thing that keeps us grounded sometimes, where we're like, okay, men are canceled. Everything is terrible. I don't know what to do. So what are you grateful for today? And it could be anything, big or small, private, political. We're big fans of Netflix. We talk about TV shows a lot. So pretty much anything.
Oh, yeah. No, I literally was just tweeting that I want to, you know, I want to like go back to bed and some, like wake up alone in the woods somewhere with just like snacks and television.
Yes.
And, you know, I would add like dogs. And,
oh, yeah.
And pot and probably my son, too, because like whatever.
Okay.
Not
yeah.
Gonna, not going to leave him out of
right.
It.
Like you can come, too. Whatever.
I agree. I'm grateful for a lot of things. And I do think it is really important to think about those. And I'm incredibly grateful these days for like this kind of network of, you know, smart and funny and kind and empathetic women.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I work with a bunch of them. I feel like I, you know, have met a bunch of them online. I do really feel like there is power in helping each other, you know, navigate this stuff.
Yeah.
And so I am absolutely grateful for that, the existence of these women.
Yeah. That's especially these days, a lot of our gratitude checks are basically thank you for women. Like,
yeah.
like thank you. So yeah, that's beautiful. So thank you so much, Andy, for joining us today. You can follow her at Andy Zeisler, and you can follow Bitch Media at Bitch Media. So thank you again. We loved talking to you.
This was really fun. Thank you.
Okay, Devin. Well, let's get into our gratitude check, which
yes.
We always need. And I'm really excited to go back and listen to your interview with Andy. I'm
yes.
sure it was great.
It was. It was so good.
Smart women. This is what I love that we have our own podcast is we just invite all the smartest women we know and to talk through some shit, you know?
Exactly.
So, Devin, what are you grateful for today?
Okay. So in the outline, I literally just my whole gratitude check is I can't do any more politics. I can't do it. You know, after me, I'm just steeped in, you know, because I'm doing the outlines and I'm reading all this shit and I'm just steeped in it. I'm like, I can't. I just need to be grateful for other things.
That's fair.
So the first thing I'm grateful for is my good friend, Lindsay. She, first of all, has been just like a huge support network for me in like the recent months and just like, you know, is, you know, basically my girl gang. She's the best.
Yeah.
And then we had that conversation on International Podcast Day about women working in the podcast industry and kind of what we face every day. And, you know, we had such a great conversation and we decided that we're going to do a little teeny tiny mini series, like podcast mini series.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're going to be quick, weekly for probably 10 weeks, like 30-minute discussions on different topics that come up when you're sort of working in any sort of setting. Like, obviously, I work for myself and she works for this big company, and talking about things like imposter syndrome and, you know, money and blame and anger and all that kind of stuff. So
love it.
It's going to be super fun. So it's going to be called 77 Cents. And it drops this Friday. So tomorrow. I'm really excited about that.
So is 77 cents, that's a reference to the pay gap, which,
yes,
more specifically, that's for white women.
White women. Yeah, we even, in our first episode, we're like, that's because we're white women and that gap is way wider based on race and ethnicity. So
yeah.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that. I'm also really excited because I went back to the gym. I started going to the gym again.
Yes.
I'm currently so sore that, like, I'm sitting on a pillow in my office. But it's good. It's good. I feel good. I feel strong. So, yeah. So just like a quick non-political thing. I just needed my brain needed a break.
I love it. I love it.
So, Sarah, what are you grateful for?
I didn't write anything extensive. Like, usually I'll take, like, an article headline and, you know,
yeah,
condense it and talk about it.
Oh, yeah. I didn't either. My whole thing was, like, Lindsay.
Yeah.
That's my whole gratitude check.
Literally, mine is just shout out to women. I'm just so fucking grateful for women. Like,
yes.
I mentioned this at the top of our show, but I've just been in rage blackout mode all week because,
yeah,
men are pissing me the fuck off. Like, there's so many men who are speaking over women during this Harvey Weinstein thing and trying to make it about other things, trying to make it about Hillary Clinton, trying to make it about this, trying to make it about that. And I just want to be like, shut the fuck up. Like, yeah. I don't want to hear from you. And so I'm just super grateful for women who are just on my rage level and are, like, pushing back, fighting the good fight, you know, speaking out, making our voices heard, and just, like, all the fucking group texts and DMs that I'm in where, you know, it truly is a safe space for us to, yeah, vent our frustration and to support each other and uplift each other. Like, I'm just so grateful to women because, like, this year has been utter trash, and women are what is getting me through this,
yeah,
because I just so appreciate, you know, female friendships, but I also just really appreciate the fact that, like, women are enraged, they're motivated, and they're not taking men's shit anymore, and I'm just
right
here for it.
Yeah. Yeah, like we say all the time, like, if this year has done anything, it's just turned all of my female friends and, like, people in my orbit into just these raging badass feminists.
Oh yeah. I mean, so I it was some tweet recently that was like, we're all, like, the fiercest warrior princess versions,
yeah,
of ourselves.
Yeah.
like
we're General Organa, not Princess Leia.
Right. We're just like, we're at peak fuck the shit o'clock, and it's like, you know what? Gloves are off.
We're fucking done.
We're done. Like, men are canceled. We're done. So I'm just really grateful to women, and especially women who came out on the record with Ronan Farrow,
yes,
in his New Yorker, yes, article about Harvey Weinstein, to people like Rose McGowan, to Jemele Hill, you know, all these women who are sticking their necks out and in a climate when it's, to be frank, it's not really friendly to do so still.
Right.
And so,
right,
I'm just really grateful for women. Like, shout out to women forever and always. Okay, Devin, so it's Thursday, and you know we love Thursday because we get to do our Hellion of the Week. So lots of badass women, like I was saying in my gratitude,
yes,
check, that are worthy of Hellion of the Week. But who is our Hellion of the Week, Devin?
So it is Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Yes.
She always a bad bitch. And I feel like RGB gets, like, kind of the... the sort of glory sometimes. But and people forget that Sotomayor is such a freaking badass.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We want to honor Sonia Sotomayor because why, Devin?
Okay. So the Supreme Court heard arguments in a gerrymandering case.
Yeah.
Out of Wisconsin. So basically, long story short, Justice Sotomayor had no fucking time for the Wisconsin state legislation's defense lawyer. So this lawyer, after this like long word salad that like really didn't mean anything, Sotomayor asked, quote, "So it's okay to stack the decks so that for 10 years or in an indefinite period of time, one party, even though it gets a minority of votes, can get the majority of seats?"
Yes, girl. Yes.
And then the lawyer had the nerve to respond, which like kind of like shout out to you, girl, because I don't think I would have been able to. She said, quote, "With all due respect, you know, I would certainly dispute the premise that the decks are stacked here. At the end of the day, what matters is how people vote in elections, and that's what's going to determine the outcomes, as it has in Wisconsin, where the Republicans have won majorities because they've actually won the majority of the vote in most of the elections over the past 4 years." Okay, so she said that, and the only reason I'm, like, telling you exactly what she said is because I'm going to go through what happened in Wisconsin elections in the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's okay. The numbers reveal some bullshit.
In 2012, Republicans won 48.6 of the statewide vote.
48.6%.
Percent.
Yeah.
Yeah, of the statewide vote. But they won 60 out of 99 seats, which is about 60%.
Wow.
In 2014, Republicans won 52% of the statewide vote and won 63 out of 99 seats, which is about 63%. And in 2016, Republicans won, again, 52% of the statewide vote and won 64 out of 99 seats. So about 64%.
Yeah. You know what's super interesting about all this? I've started listening to the podcast More Perfect. Have you heard of it? It's
no.
From Radiolab. And they go through constitutional cases and issues. And one of them that they talk about is gerrymandering. And the big question with gerrymandering is how... You know, what is a sort of neutral map look like? And how can we use data to determine what that would mean? And so there's some really interesting formulas that people are trying to come up with. Like if you get X percent of this vote, this is how many X percent of the seats you should actually get. And it's not like one for one necessarily. It's like a little bit more. So it's super interesting because like gerrymandering is like a political problem, but it's also a math problem.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. So something like, you know, drawing district lines is actually a little bit of a combination of politics, math, and magic, right? And I say that because it's really, it's so much more complicated than people think it is.
Yep.
And while that's true, I still think that, you know, people can use the math and magic part to obscure the political part, which is the problem.
I mean, Republicans getting less than 50% of the vote, but 60% of the seats, that's out of whack. There's something seriously wrong there.
Right. Obviously, like you said, it can be a little more than one to one. There's all these like formulas behind it, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But 48.6% of the vote and 60 seats is some bullshit.
It's some bullshit. And that's why we love Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor, because she's having none of this bullshit.
Right.
Yeah. Let's take this quote from Slate that I thought summed up a lot about Sotomayor. So, quote, "Many conservatives spurn Sotomayor as a minor intellect," which I was like, what? And then it says sometimes out of racism, which is like, yeah, that sounds pretty racist and sexist.
Well, yeah. So they're calling her a minor intellect, but Gore such an asshole is like this, like just paragon of intelligence.
Nope.
Please.
Nope. But then they continue, "But frequently due to misunderstanding of her jurisprudential style, when questioning counsel, Sotomayor would rather zero in on factual flaws and spurious assumptions than spin out twisty doctrinal hypotheticals. While critics mistake this for a lack of sophistication," in actuality, it shows her hunger to strike at the heart of the issue before the court with minimal pretension or delay. Because she's like the baddest bitch and is like, let's get to the point.
Yeah, she's like, I don't have time for you.
Yeah, reclaiming my time.
Yeah, pretty much. So like, fuck you and get to the point. Like, come on.
Yeah, so shout out to Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. And we really like to highlight cases, especially as it relates to gerrymandering and voting yes. rights, because that's super important to us. So Sonia Sotomayor is our Hellion of the Week.
Okay, Sarah, so last but not least, let's talk about some action items. So things that our listeners can do after the show.
Yeah. So our first one is from one of the other baddest bitches that we know.
Right.
Hillary Diane Rodham, motherfucking Clinton. That's her full yes. name. so she tweeted, quote, "This hasn't gotten enough attention. For the first time, Congress missed the deadline to reauthorize the Children's Health Insurance Program." So she... her call to action is to call Congress. So if you don't have your rep's number, you can just call 202-224-3121. And then, you know, tell your reps to that we must work together to get this done for children and families counting on CHIP, because it's up to 9 million people.
Well, yeah. And honestly, I don't understand how this doesn't demand immediate bipartisan action. This is not a political, I mean, it is a political issue, but it shouldn't be.
Right.
We're talking about children. So pull your lives together, Congress. Like, get it the fuck together.
Yeah.
Take all your shit, put it in a backpack, and pass CHIP.
Yeah. Stop coming after women and just protect children, you assholes.
Right. Exactly. Our next action item is from friend of the pod, Julie, who is at Resisterhood. She said, quote, fellow Virginians, 6 days left to register to vote in our critical 11/7 election. Check your status / register here, and it's vote.elections.virginia.gov/voter-information, and that's really long, but we'll link to it. And actually, now, as of this recording, it's only 4 days.
Yeah.
So you got to put some hustle on it.
Yeah. Register to vote, and this is for the governor's race. And
yes.
I had seen a story recently that the margin of error, like the race is within the margin of error, and the Republican candidate for governor is a total Trumpian dickwad. So get your register to vote, get your friends in Virginia to register to vote, and make sure they turn out for Northam.
Yes. And then two last action items. We're going to just keep talking about it. Donate to Puerto Rico and U.S. Virgin Islands recovery. You can do so at unidosporpuertorico.com/EN for Puerto Rico. And you can go to usvirecovery.org to donate to the Virgin Islands recovery.
Yep.
So just want to keep that on the top of everyone's minds.
Yeah, definitely. Super important. Okay, Devin. So that's our show. Lots of rage blackouts, as always.
Always.
There's just so much going on all the time. We want to do our Hillary Clinton book club bonus Patreon episode soon. I'm feeling oh so close to 100%. I'm like really, really inching there. So once I feel better, I think we're going to do it. So thank you to everyone who not only listens to our show, but supports us on Patreon. We're trying to get that bonus content, that sweet, sweet bonus content for you out more regularly again.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and we will see you back here on Monday. Thank you.